chicken fried, and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us on the phone, we have Jimmy Patronis. He is our congressman from Florida District 1. Jimmy, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning.
Great to have you. Great to have you. So we got a lot of stuff to get to. One thing I do want to make sure we get out of the way first is, did you do anything special on Friday for National Donut Day?
So the donut hole is, when it comes to donuts, I don't think anybody holds a candle to them. They're just really, family owned, good operation. And one of the family's kids works for me.
Oh,
so,
nice.
So we just, help celebrate, their role in donuts in Northwest Florida.
Oh, nice. All right. Very good. I always like to ask those kind of questions because I never know what the answer is going to be. And I like that. That's good.
Do you have a favorite donut?
I'm a Krispy Kreme guy. Just because Hot Fresh now is like, you can't beat that. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But Milton Bakery is amazing. I don't know if you've had a chance to go to Milton Bakery in Milton, but it is everything that people say about it and more. It's fantastic. John, confirm?
Oh, that is confirmed.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Okay, that's on a list to stop at. I do like an apple fritter or a bear claw or like a almost anything with cinnamon sugar.
Yeah, the big cinnamon roll of any kind, pretty much anywhere, you can't go wrong with that because you've put enough dough and cinnamon and brown sugar in. I mean, how can you go wrong? That's really not possible.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of good stuff you can make with the regular old canned Pillsbury crescent rolls
in your oven. Exactly. I love talking food with a restaurateur. That's fantastic. You guys are doing a town hall, I think, tomorrow with James Uthmeyer, the attorney general for the state of Florida, on AI chatbots. I just read over the weekend a really scary, useful perspective on this. The short version is, people are using AI chatbots and we know they're using them for, doctor's advice and fake girlfriends and boyfriends and, counseling and religious guidance or whatever, but they're using them for mental health counseling. And the problem is that the chatbot, number one, doesn't ever challenge the facts of the person, collusion, whereas a mental health practitioner will always be challenging the facts because they might be wrong. And then two, they are trying to be liked, the sycophancy problem, where they're always telling people what they want to hear. So people who are delusional and go to the chatbot for advice get their facts confirmed and their self-diagnosis confirmed. And this is really dangerous stuff, but that's kind of in the nature of a lot of these AI chatbots, right?
Yeah. So what gets me is, let's take Gemini, for example. That's a Google product. If you go and ask Gemini any question of a political nature, it will default to a search engine response. It will not give you anything as an AI-generated response. Then you click the tab to do AI-generated. It just brings up the search and your response again. So it's like in the case of Google, they're like, I don't want to get anywhere near politics.
Yeah.
And then when you go into some of these other products, whether it be ChatGPT or Grok, and you ask it health-related questions, when it's something regarding an ailment you've got, an upset stomach, they give you all these precautions. But on the mental health, it seems like I haven't played with it on that case. I'm hearing exactly what you say. These things are they're befriending the user in a way that's very concerning. And I'm afraid these things, are not being monitored enough of influence they are having on the user.
Well, instead of being a healing effect or a remedial effect or a corrective effect, the way a good mental health practitioner would be, they're just leaning in the direction of the skid. And the people, the most dangerous interactions are the ones that the users give the highest ratings to because, he agrees with me. It's everybody is out to get me. No, I mean, that's the problem. Anyway, I just wanted to put that on your radar for your town. When is the town hall?
It's going to be 6 p.m. tomorrow night.
Okay.
And the number you want to dial is 833-305-1733. We'll be posting on my social media. We will be proactively calling, like when we should be doing a town hall, we call somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 phones.
Okay, wow.
And so you can just literally just answer your phone and be plugged right in. Or, like I said, I was in Escambia County last week, and I was talking to the REC, and there were some people there that did not participate. So, you know, we're, you know, giving those phone numbers out to them manually because not everybody's in our database. It's the database that we inherited from Matt Gaetz's office. So, you know, this is just how we try to get outreach. And you get a lot of people that can't get out of their home or don't want to get out of their home, but would love to participate in a town hall.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of it. It's much larger and easier to pull off, especially in the era of technology, than a physical town hall. Wasn't going to bring this up, but it comes up a lot when people text me. Please, please, please tell Mr. Petonis that a lot of voters really want the Sunshine Protection Act. We're tired of changing the clock twice a year. I talked with Rick Scott the other day, but I wasn't able to get that. Any progress?
No, so it's moved in both chambers, which is more than it's ever done. When a bill moves out of committee, then it's essentially gotten ready for the floor. So now that it's ready for the floor, it's just a matter of getting it through rules and then vote it out. So I personally think you'll see something happen with that, you know, before the end of the summer.
Okay, well, great. So we might have done our last time change.
Yeah, it would be kind of crazy because, you know, I think the only one I ever like is fallback because you get the extra hour.
Right.
Yeah. Let's just stop screwing with me.
I'm saying, and the president has come out in favor of this as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your machine guns proposal. For people who didn't catch the news a couple of weeks ago, you filed a bill that would essentially make it so that manufacturers who make, you know, anybody who can buy a gun, a long gun, can buy a machine gun. Fully automatic machine guns will be legal again. There are ones that were made pre-86 that are still legal, but there are some restrictions. But this would make it so that anybody who can buy an AR-15 would be able to buy a fully automatic AR-15 or an Uzi or an AK-47 or whatever. I've talked with local law enforcement. Sheriff Johnson says, you know, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but here's what I think they have basically told me is, he doesn't think it would be all that useful for his people because they're trained to use skill shots and, you know, fully automatic isn't particularly useful against a single assailant. It's more suppressive fire combat environments. But he is concerned about what that would do for the person who's out to do mass harm. Chip Simmons, same way. You know, and the worry is that if the bad guys go to this and the good guys have to go to this. But both of them were concerned, you know, both big gun folks, okay, very pro-Second Amendment.
They're both pro-Second Amendment.
And I've had the same response, which is like, man, you know, it sounds like fun, but I don't really need one. I don't view it as a need, and I do think that really a lot of the worst people would gun up in this way and make it so that mass murder in crowds would be far more likely. And have you talked with other law enforcement? Where is this bill at in its process?
The bill has been filed, has not yet been agendaed in its committee of reference. I believe it's in Commerce. But there's, look, I just don't like impediments to owning firearms. And to me, this is just one more way the camel's nose is under the tent, and this happened years ago. I just don't like it. I think we should have the right to bear arms, should have the right to bear arms. And stuff like this gets thrown. It was a Hughes Amendment that puts that impediment in place. As much as that, God, I want to go own a machine gun, I just don't like rules and buying a gun. That's really where it is. Now, I'm a massive proponent of getting folks out there and getting firearm education. You know, I see people that own a firearm, and you can tell by the way they handle it, ever been to a range to shoot it with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily treat the weapon with the type of respect they should. They don't understand the firepower that they've got in their hands. So I'm also a huge advocate that if you're going to own a firearm, go understand what type of lethality you got in your hand, because you need to learn to respect it. And I think some people don't realize the explosive nature of these devices. But, you know, I think it's vital that we don't stand in the way of the Second Amendment.
By the way, on a side note, the Transgressive Memorial Service that I do on Friday, Brother Andrew did cancel you, not last Friday, but the Friday before, for your stance on guns. And you find that entertaining. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it. But
what church is that? I was going to go show up one morning.
It's the Holy Church of Wokeness. You know, we have we have an early service at 6:20 on a Friday, and 8:20 on a Friday is the late service. So he's not ordained. He's self-ordained.
Was Gay there?
What's that now?
Was Gay there? Was she in the front row?
I don't know whether Ms. Valamont attends the service or not, but she could probably be an elder in the church. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, that's right.
But other issues that I wanted to make sure to talk about with you: the property tax proposal is on the table now. They voted for it. It's going to be on the ballot. I again, you were the CFO. And so you've seen the financial stuff. They basically, in the end, bailed out on, like, you're not going to get your property taxes cut when it comes to the school board. You're still going to pay all of that if it passes. You just won't pay the county or the city the homestead exemption amount, which is going to go up to $250,000. Cities and counties are squealing. I'm torn on it. I know my local friends in government that are saying we can't possibly make this work without massive cuts in service. Also, as a homeowner, I'd love to keep an extra $2,000 a year. So I'm torn, but what are your thoughts?
So one, I'm concerned about what this is going to do to the scrutiny over our public safety. Okay. So this is, if I'm going to put the pros and cons, I'm going to show the biggest con I've got. We've got an amazing state with good jobs and nice places to take our kids because it's safe, because this state invests in safety. Now, that primary funding comes from, it doesn't come from the state of Florida, it doesn't come from the federal government, it comes from property taxes. That is how local law enforcement is funded. That's how our first responders are funded. When you call 911 and somebody shows up at your house a minute and a half later, you know, thank your property taxes. So that's a reality that now there'll be scrutiny placed on those budget silos. The other concern I've got is you think about, yeah, it's great, I'm gonna own a home and pay less in taxes for it, and I'm gonna put that in my pocket. But where the hurt is gonna happen is the guy who's gonna be renting. Now that guy that's gonna be renting is gonna experience a higher cost of business of renting his place because there'll be a cost shift from somebody who owns their home versus somebody who is renting an apartment. So, I mean, there's going to be some gives and takes. You know, if you own property in the state and you're a resident, you know, you're going to be the biggest beneficiary. And a lot of times, and again, I'm just being a pundit, a lot of times electeds will be sensitive to want to benefit those that live here, that are job creators, that raise their kids here, okay? And they don't really care about the transients or the people that, you know, don't necessarily own a home. But if you own a home, then more than likely you're a voter and you're going to care about the direction of our state.
You know what, I think you're exactly right that, you know, the millage on commercial property is absolutely going to go up, and that is going to get a cost passed on through to the renters. And look, you know, we own a home, and we own a homestead and also a rental home. And I think, why is it like my home, you know, you argue that I shouldn't have to keep paying rent on that every year, but why should I have to keep paying rent on the home that somebody else rents from me? You know, it's the same issue, but those prices are going to go up because that means renters are going to have a hard time of it. I totally agree that that's going to be an outcome.
Yeah. Do you need to do traffic?
No, you're good. I love it. So, he's producing for the show. I love it. Go on.
The other thing I'm sensitive to is the reason why they held education harmless is you get into year two or three of this, the legislature is going to have to go find $5 billion to fund K-12. And the legislature cannot guarantee. One thing I know about this state, I'm the gray hair, right? So I've been through COVID. I've been through the foreclosure crisis. When you turn off the construction industry or you turn off the tourism industry in the state of Florida, you collapse the state of Florida's ability to make money. And so the concern is things are humming along just great right now. But if a God forbid, a natural event, 9/11, these type of events have a catastrophic event on Florida because we are sales tax primarily. So this is what the legislature was afraid of. They can always write a check to K-12 in the future to help out, but they don't want to be the responsible for fully funding K-12 because of a property tax, you know, initiative that the voters voted on.
Right. Yeah. I agree with all that. And I had a really good conversation on Friday with Nathan Boyles, the new representative for District 3.
Yeah.
And he basically, Judge Maney were the only ones who said no. And I thought, well, I mean, if you're going to be in company, you know, that's good company. And I thought he had some very, very good reasons, including the transient thing, the five-year thing is we're trying to always get military people to come here. And all of a sudden, military people are going to come here and we're going to tax them like they're the bad guys. And he's like, well, that's not great for people wanting to come to Florida for change of station. I thought, oh, that's a good point. Nobody's ever mentioned that. I thought that was an interesting one.
So the two other things I'll leave you with.
Yeah, yeah.
When Marco Rubio was Speaker of the House, I was in the state legislature. This was a big deal. So we wanted to get rid of homestead taxes And so we proposed a 2.5% sales tax increase across the board in the state, and it would replace your homestead tax. The Senate killed it. The counties fussed because the counties didn't know how we're going to ensure we're going to get our money back from the state. But that's the other thing I think is important to note. What has been proposed with the sales tax amendment, I mean, the property tax amendment that's proposed, there's not any tax replacement revenue.
Right.
So, I mean, the initiative is expecting local governments to go find money in their budget in order to fund these other elements of government. And I think that was probably, I haven't talked to Nathan, but I'm sure that's part of one of his concerns.
Exactly. Yeah. Replacement income is not part of the plan. And that's why, I mean, a plan that had good alternatives and a good, you know, progression from here to there, 100%. A plan like this is, you know, very concerning for all the reasons that you said. That's exactly right.
Well, I told some of the legislators, said, look, put 5-year sunset on this.
Yep.
And, you know, and the nice thing about the 5-year sunset is you would get the attention of every taxing authority in the state. They would have a really deep dive, deep drill exercise into their budget. They would have to cut for 5 years straight. And then if the voters are going to find that relief pleasant, and they're going to want to fight to keep it. And now they're going to start engaging the budgeting process of local government, which that civic engagement is healthy. So now you'd have the opportunity to say, all right, do y'all really want to? Yes, we want it. So you'd have this fight. Okay, what services do you really need?
No, that's a good you know, here's what's funny. Carlos Guillermo Smith in the Senate offered that same amendment, completely thrown away. And I agree with it as well. Jimmy Petronas, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for the excellent commentary. We look forward to the town hall with you and A.G. Uthmeyer tomorrow night. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks.